Hello and happy Tuesday. This is Nancy reading to you today from your Providence Journal. It is February 17th, 2026. Our cover story is by Katie Mulvaney. Class helps Rhode Island inmates understand causes of behavior. Young minds are pliable and sensitive to the swirl of life unfolding around them. But what if a childhood is jammed by family disruption, violence, and neglect and abuse? Neuroscientists long ago learned that such factors have a lasting impact on the brain that can result in a lack of impulse control, being locked in fear or flight, and making poor choices leading to encounters with the criminal justice system. The Center for Law, Brain, and Behavior at Mass General Hospital in November launched a course called Neuroscience in Action, an Introduction to Brain Development, Trauma, and Addiction that is available to people incarcerated at the adult correctional institutions in Cranston, as well as the Donald W. Wyatt Detention Facility in Central Falls. It's the first neuroscience course designed for incarcerated learners, and it's available at more than 1,400 prisons and jails via electronic tablets, according to the Center for Law, Brain, and Behavior. More than 13,000 people are estimated to have started the course, which focuses on topics such as adverse childhood experiences, trauma and toxic stress, the science of substance abuse, and psychology and neuroscience in the legal systems. It's available via tablet to people serving time in Rhode Island through a partnership with the educational nonprofit Edovo, whose mission is to expand access to education and rehabilitative programming in prisons. The State Department of Corrections relies on Edovo's array of 1,000 self-paced courses focusing on education, vocational training, and rehabilitative programming, a corrections spokesman said. Tablets have been available at the ACI for about a year. According to Stephanie Tabashnik, director of the Neuro Law Library, the course was designed by a team of neuroscientists, clinicians, and legal experts. Its curriculum provides an overview of neuroscience, including exploring how childhood adversity, trauma, and substance use affect the brain. Through scientific insights, the course aims to highlight the importance of resilience and healing in supportive environments in overcoming the effects of trauma. It's empowering to be able to understand neuroscience, Tabashnik said. The greater grasp of science can lead to better outcomes in the criminal justice realm, and the course aims to equip people to advocate for themselves in the court, she said. They might learn, for instance, why they become triggered by certain things or what is contributing to flashbacks. The course is geared towards people at lower reading levels to ensure it is accessible to as many people as possible. I think there's a hunger for this type of information, she said. People who are incarcerated have an understanding harmful patterns to first step towards change. For many, the course represents the first time they had access to scientific language that helps explain patterns they've lived with for years and provides a path towards change, Edovo wrote in a blog post in January. Access to knowledge changes what people believe is possible for themselves, Brian Hill, founder of Edovo, said. By delivering neuroscience education inside prisons and jails, we're helping learners better understand behavior, trauma, resilience, and it's an essential step towards personal growth and successful reentry. According to the Brain Center, one person at the ACI's John J. Moran Medium Security Facility wrote an anonymous review that read, "Highly recommended for everyone, extremely informative in neuroscience and the law. A lot of great information, a must for inmates." So what is the Center for Law, Brain, and Behavior? The Center for Law, Brain, and Behavior is based in the Department of Psychiatry at the Massachusetts General Hospital with a stated mission to transform law, public policy and professional practice in criminal justice through the use of accurate, actionable neuroscience. It strives to train lawyers, judges, probation staff, and others who shape the criminal justice system. Our next cover story is by Antonia Nouri Fazan. Providence puts up signs limiting ICE activity on city property. U.S. Immigration and Custom Enforcement, ICE, is now largely banned from staging on or carrying out certain operations on city-owned property, including public parks, according to new signage going up around the city of Providence. The first official sign was installed Friday in Roger Williams Park, according to WPRI. It states, "This property is owned by the City of Providence. It may not be used as a staging area for any operations related to civil immigration enforcement." So what ICE can and can't do on city property in Providence? Providence Mayor Brett Smiley signed an executive order in January that prevents ICE and other federal agencies from using city-owned properties when enforcing civil immigration laws. Immigration officers can still conduct operations on city-owned properties if they have a warrant or are enforcing criminal laws. In other words, the order prevents ICE from arresting people who are suspected of being in the country illegally, a civil infraction, in places like Providence City Hall, city parking lots, and public schools. It also prevents ICE from using the parks or parking lots as a staging area for parking or gathering before an operation, a processing location for people arrested during enforcement activities, or as an operational site. However, ICE officers can still enter those spaces when helping pursue suspects wanted for criminal infractions like drug trafficking or murder. Providence plans to post the signs on all city-owned properties and also provide templates for private individuals and businesses that want their own. Our last cover story is by Jack Perry. Bill would ban sale of parrots from Rhode Island breeders. A bill that would mostly ban the sale of parrots at pet stores in Rhode Island is under consideration by the House Corporations Committee. The committee hosted a hearing on the bill, H7334, on Wednesday, February 11th, and held it for further study. The bill targets breeding operations and bans the sale of parrots from a breeder or a broker, but allows pet stores to sell parrots from animal rescue organizations or animal care facilities. Supporters of the bill say parrots are bred in poor conditions and that the wild tropical birds should not spend their lives in cages. Opponents claim that regulations are in place to protect the birds, and it's unfair to target the pet stores or deprive people who want to own birds as pets. What does PETA think of the bill? People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, the world's largest animal rights organization, is urging lawmakers to pass the bill. Breeders treat birds as disposable commodities to churn out as quickly and cheaply as possible, with little to no regard for their health and well-being, Allison Fandel, manager of special projects for PETA's Cruelty Investigations Department, wrote to lawmakers. Parrots are highly social animals who, in nature, are rarely alone. They live in close-knit flocks, flying and foraging together during the day and sleeping together in the same tree at night. Many parrots spend their entire lives with one partner with whom they share parenting duties, Fandel wrote. Parents bred to be sold into the pet trade are sentenced to lives of loneliness and deprivation. PETA has more than 24,000 members and supporters in Rhode Island, according to Fandel. Why do avid culturists oppose the bill? The Organizations of Professional Avid Culturists, OPA, claims the law would simply send buyers to online sources or less accountable intermediaries, reducing oversight rather than strengthening it. Make no mistake, measures of this kind are part of a broader effort to eliminate the keeping of pet birds in the United States and ultimately restrict the commercial availability of companion animals more broadly, wrote David A. Garcia, legal counsel for the OPA. That is government overreach unsupported by demonstrated public demand. Americans value their pets and do not want to see them regulated out of their lives. Garcia argued that Rhode Island does not face a documented crisis of pet bird overpopulation or systemic enforcement failure. A categorical retail ban is neither targeted nor evidence-based. And a Portsmouth resident, Krista Albrecht-Vegas, urged lawmakers to pass the bill, arguing that birds aren't meant to spend their lives in cages. Birds require a level of companionship, enrichment, and commitment that most people are not able to provide. Impulse purchases lead to birds with stereotypical and self-destructive behaviors, aggression, and an unforeseen level of dietary and veterinary care, Albrecht-Vegas wrote to lawmakers. She wrote that everyone she knows who has bought a bird ultimately sought to rehome their bird with someone who could provide the life it deserved. These lives cannot be provided by people. They can only be provided by other wild birds with the ability to fly and exercise their natural instincts. Foster Parrots, a nonprofit organization dedicated to the rescue and protection of unwanted and abused companion parrots, sent two representatives to the hearing to speak in favor of the bill. The rescue tries to find homes for adoptive parents, but receives an overwhelming number of surrender requests, according to Karen Windsor, executive director. Last year, the organization fielded 771 surrender requests and admitted 98 parrots to its sanctuary. It found adoptive homes for 53, but had 6 birds returned. Most of the surrender requests, 81.5%, come from the New England states, with 29.8% coming from Rhode Island, according to Windsor. Parrots can live long lives, and it's not uncommon for them to outlive their guardians. The top reason for surrender requests at foster parrots was due to the death or aging of guardians. Foster Parrots currently has 328 parrots living in its New England exotic wildlife sanctuary in Hope Valley. Windsor said, animal protection legislation will not remove pets from lives. Alternately, it will compel pet retailers to work cooperatively with animal shelters and rescue organizations, facilitating the placement of millions of homeless animals. But Walter R. Ducharme, a co-owner of Jungle Junction in Cumberland, said a bill would prohibit the lawful small business operations. For more than 3 decades, Jungle Junction has responsibly provided hand-fed baby parrots to families throughout Rhode Island and New England, Ducharme wrote. We are proud to employ Rhode Island taxpayers, contribute to the economy, and operate under long-standing reputable business practices. If the law passes, violation will be punishable by a $1,000 fine. Pet stores would have a 1-year grace period to sell parrots already in their possession. In a story by Jack Perry, should Rhode Island make it a felony to assault a sports referee? Sports referee Tara Pinsky remembers a fan yelling, "You suck," at her after she made a call he didn't like. It turns out the fan was a surgeon, and Pinsky often finds herself thinking, can you imagine me yelling at him during surgery that he sucks? Pinsky and other referees say they're experiencing more abusive and unruly behavior at games, and it scares them. I am always concerned about my safety, Pinsky wrote in a letter to the Rhode Island House Judiciary Committee. To provide sports officials like Pinsky another layer of protection, the legislator is considering a bill, H-7549, that would make it a felony to assault a sports official. Anyone convicted of assaulting a sports official while performing their duties can be imprisoned for up to 3 years or fined up to $3,000 or both, according to the bill. The bill defines sports officials as any person who enforces the rules of any sporting event, such as an umpire, referee, linesman, coach, or any other participant in regulating or enforcing the rules of the sporting event. Coaches can certainly take their share of heat from fans, but some referees say they can be part of the problem, too. Supporters say the legislation is needed to protect sports officials, send a message, and also because unruly behavior by fans, parents, and coaches has led to an official shortage, sending some into early retirement and discouraging others from becoming referees, umpires, and officials. But in opposing the bill, the Rhode Island Office of the Public Defender says existing Rhode Island laws already protects sports officials from assaultive behavior, and the new law would likely lead to over-prosecution of some very minor offenses. The Rhode Island Interscholastic League, as well as the Rhode Island Hockey Officials Association, submitted letters in support of the bill. Unfortunately, assaults and intimidation towards officials have become more common nationally, as well as here in Rhode Island, wrote Michael Lunny, executive director of the RIISL. We've seen an alarming rise in harassment that discourages good people from officiating and from working athletic events. The result is an official shortage that threatens the future of organized sports at every level, especially interscholastic athletics. He said many schools have security or police officers at game because of the growing challenges of spectator behavior. 13% of officials reported being assaulted in a national survey by the National Association of Sports Officials, Lunny wrote. 87% of the 36,000 officials in the survey reported verbal abuse, Lunny wrote. 48% of male officials and 45% of females reported fearing for their safety, Lunny said. An official at a high school at college level for 22 years, Jeannie Records Boyle informed the committee of being cornered in a bathroom by an irate parent in May of 2023. I felt threatened for my well-being, she wrote. The irate parent was a middle school principal in Massachusetts, according to Boyle. I felt fear like I hadn't experienced, especially when returning to my car to see an unknown individual parked behind my car and staring at me, she wrote. Problems often follow officials off the court or the playing field. 50-year referee Bob Baroli wrote that he was escorted off the field and out of the gymnasium by police. Pinsky, the referee who was berated by the surgeon, said to prepare for the worst. She and other game officials parked their cars together with the fronts facing out for a quick departure. They also walk on and off the field together for protection. Why does the Public Defender's Office oppose the bill? In opposing the bill, Angela M. Yingling, legislative liaison for the Public Defender's Office, wrote, "We appreciate that sports officials are often subject to unfair treatment by fans and that sometimes this behavior can even escalate into the criminal. But we believe that the existing statutory scheme adequately penalizes assaultive behavior and allows the courts to appropriately increase the penalties when aggravating circumstances exist, all the while maintaining the necessary level of judicial discretion that is required in such fact-driven scenarios." She noted that Rhode Island law already makes assault causing bodily injury punishable by up to 20 years in prison, making that part of the bill redundant. But she wrote that the Public Defender's Office sees problems with the part of the bill that would make every assault upon a sports official, including ones that result in no injuries and ones where no contact is ever made, become a 3-year felony. Yingling wrote, "Turning every assault, even something as small as a finger flick on an official's shirt, into a 3-year felony would be overcorrecting the problem." The House Judiciary Committee held the bill for further study after a hearing on Wednesday, February 11th. From the sports world, and this is by Jacob Rousseau, high school gymnastics, there's more pressure this year. Gianna Desmarais etched her name last year. The winter was about holding off the state's gymnastics field. The Cranston West gymnast's next title was approaching before a fall on the beam put a second consecutive crown in doubt. But she capped her individual championship with a stunning effort on floor and finished off the all-around title with her first career gold in the event. Desmarais ended with a 36.575 all-around score to grab top honors. The junior broke through with her first title and a 37.2 score a year ago, and as a freshman, she finished runner-up in the all-around. She defended in her gold in bars with a 9.10 and vault with a 9.525, and the one in the floor with a 9.55 on Sunday, February 15th at Rhode Island College's Murray Center. Her fall on beam kept Desmarais from challenging the state's all-around record, but she has another chance at history next year and can become just the sixth three-time champion. "It felt really good, and I've never had a floor routine like that," Desmarais said. "But after falling off the beam, I knew that I had to push for this event to win all around." Rhode Island College was silent. Everyone knew what they were watching as Desmarais took the floor. Her routine would not only seal the individual championship, it was the highest score in any event for the day. "There was more pressure this year," Desmarais said, "but to me, pressure is a privilege, and it just set my expectations higher so I can come in and win this competition and do exactly what I know how to do." Desmarais started on the vault and stuck her routine, and quick turnaround landed her on the bars where she waited for her opportunity on the beam. The fall was her only mistake in a near-perfect afternoon. She ended on floor, the same event that pushed Cranston West to the Division II title on Saturday, and left with the day's top honors in hand. "I need to keep working at the gym and pushing myself for upgrades," Desmarais said, "having countless hours inside the gym and then just come in here and have fun." Abigail Moranville was at Rhode Island College to accomplish one thing, win the beam. And the West Warwick junior did just that with an 8.850 score. She captured the event by 0.025 for her first career gold at the individual championships. "I was excited and trying to stay focused and keep the nerves away and then focus on what I know how to do," Mandeville said. "I think it went pretty well. I knew once I stuck my back tuck on the beam that I was all set. And even if I didn't place first, I was still going to be happy." Middletown's Maya Ferris came to compete and grabbed a runner-up placement in the all-around with a 36.625. The sophomore will be the one to watch again next season as she snags second in the beam with an 8.825 and the bars 8.700 and nabbed third in the floor with a 9.250. It was a podium-filled day for Ferris and was only topped by Desmarais. "I was just trying to stay calm throughout the day with the nerves," Ferris said. "I was trying to stay focused and not let anyone's routines get to me. Next year, I'm going to keep improving my skills and supporting my team." The Mount Hope duo of Cara Pisali and L. Rodriguez starred again after winning the team state championship on Saturday. Pisali finished third and Rodriguez fourth in the all-around, and they'll be back next season ready to build on a standout winter. "I think of me and Rodriguez as a kind of dynamic duo," Pisali said. "It's really helping carry Mount Hope through because I usually get a nice score on the floor and the vault, and she carries through on the beam and the bars. This weekend was amazing. It was the best case scenario." In the sports news, baseball, Boston's Anthony joins Team USA. Boston Red Sox outfielder Roman Anthony was named to the Team USA roster on Monday for next month's World Baseball Classic. Anthony, age 21, is an injury replacement for Arizona Diamondbacks outfielder Corbin Carroll, sidelined with a broken bone in his right hand. Anthony made his Major League debut on June 9, 2025, and batted .292 with 8 home runs, 18 doubles, and 32 ribbies in 71 games for the Red Sox. He joins a U.S. roster managed by Mark DeRosa and featuring captain Aaron Judge, Bryce Harper, Cal Raleigh, Kyle Schwarber, Bobby Witt Jr., and Alex Bregman. The World Classic Baseball runs from March 5th to the 17th and features 20 teams. Japan won the most recent WBC in 2023 for its third championship. Team USA won the event in 2017 and runner-up in 2003. And college basketball, UConn's Auriemma ties the record. UConn remained the unanimous number one team on Monday, and Huskies coach Gino Auriemma tied the record for the most appearances in the Associated Press's top 25 women's basketball coach. UConn has appeared in the rankings 654 times during Auriemma's 41-year Hall of Fame career, matching the mark set by former Stanford coach Tara Vanderveer. The Huskies have been ranked for the past 619 consecutive weeks. Defending champion UConn, who's 27-0, posted victories last week against Creighton and Marquette to extend its winning streak to 43 games overall and 63 straight in Big East play. This has been Nancy reading to you today from your Providence Journal. Have a wonderful day. Thanks for being here with me.